Hey, from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerd, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hey, Darren.
Hey, you.
How you doing?
I'm right. You came in hot, like my can blew off my head.
Like a
Looney Tune.
I was not very energetic before, and you were like, we got to bring the thunder.
I did say that.
You said, let's bring the thunder.
So you
I was
did.
Like, I got to bring the thunder.
Yeah,
so thunder brought.
Like the mighty Thor, the thunder.
It has already been brought, my friend.
You held Mjolnir high aloft your head.
Yes.
And you're like, rah, 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 rah.
I am worthy.
Yes.
I am.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So nice. Lofting it.
Yeah. So happy Valentine's Day to everybody there, and happy Presidents' Day weekend to everybody out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How's your
February holidays?
Yeah. How's your weekend happening? All right.
It was all right. It was, you know, relatively uneventful. Nothing too much happening. What about you?
Same. It was okay. Not too bad. You out there breaking hearts and taking numbers and taking names. Painting the town red.
Sure.
Okay. Tripping the light fantastic with some Cupid doll. Vodio dough. I don't know what I'm getting at here.
Yeah. I think I got a couple likes on Facebook dating.
Hot.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So, right. Yeah, go me.
Wow, you're tearing the world aflame.
Right.
Light up the sky like a flame.
Yes.
Fame. Good times, guys. We're here to talk about a little movie called Bob Roberts. This week was an off week, and I think we decided, let's do a movie. It's President's Day weekend. It's also an election year, so maybe we could do like a political SNL movie.
Yes, and this kind of is an SNL movie because it is sort of a spinoff or something that grew out of an SNL sketch, but it's not one that we typically think of as an SNL movie. This is a movie director Tim Robbins directed in 1992. It was his first movie that he ever directed, I believe.
Yeah, came out September 4th, 1992. Bob Roberts, written, directed, and starring Tim Robbins. It grossed about 4.5 mil. I was trying to find out what the budget was, but I couldn't find it anywhere. But
All I know is it's low budget, and they did a couple things to kind of stretch the budget and get the most bang out of their buck, and we'll get into that
So I mean the description of the movie is as follows.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Robbins stars as Bob Roberts, a radical folk singer turned senatorial candidate in the satirical comedy that blends his campaign trail with singing, music videos, and scandal. Bob Roberts is a hilarious film that will change the way you look at American politics.
Wow, that's very vague.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. I don't know if they knew how to sell it.
Yeah.
That's basically the gist of it.
Bob Roberts, if you've not seen the movie, and it's become kind of a cult movie since its release. It didn't do that great in its release, but it's become a cult movie since.
Yeah, it had like a really small opening. I mean, this came out when I was freshman in high school, and I don't remember hearing about it until maybe years later. So it had like a really small release, but since then, it had like a huge cult following.
And researching this, and apparently it had a bit of a resurgence in its 25th anniversary when I was doing Google searches in search of trivia and information about the movie.
Right.
There are a few articles that are found about Bob Roberts in the age of Trump, because there are some similarities.
So many similarities.
The character Bob Roberts, he's this hard right politician.
He was a folk singer who got into politics.
Yeah.
They talk about it in the beginning. He's basically like a Fox News answer to Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
He sings folk songs in that sort of that 60s folk song way, but he has a right-leaning slant to it.
And I kind of forgotten how many connections to Bob Dylan this movie has.
Yeah.
And I'm kicking myself a little bit because I could have gotten, if I thought of this a little sooner, I could have gotten my buddy Rob Kelly to guest star in this episode because he's a huge, huge Bob Dylan fan.
Oh,
and he could have given us a little more Bob Dylan context about the movie, and he's also a lefty, so I think this would have been right up his alley. So apologies to my friend Rob Kelly, but listen to his podcast about Bob Dylan, Pod Dylan. I've guest starred on episode Pod Dylan.
I like that.
It's on the Fire and Water Podcast Network, and good stuff. He does a different Bob Dylan song each week.
Oh, we're doing cross promotions here.
We are. He's a buddy. I want to see him do good.
Okay. Well, as far as the movie goes, we see that Bob Roberts, he came out with some albums the freewheeling Bob Roberts,
right?
The times they are a changing back,
mm-hmm.
and like
Bob on Bob.
Yeah, they're all right. albums, of course, named after Bob Dylan albums. I think he like self-released them because I don't think he was signed to a label.
They're on his label, the Pride label.
The Pride label, exactly. Yeah. And even though like a lot of the news outlets and music reviewers saying it's terrible, kind of anti-hippie stuff,
mm-hmm.
he still somehow managed to gain a following. And,
yeah,
and of course the Rust Belt states.
They give the backstory of the character early on, and he was born in a hippie commune and raised by like these two hippies.
Right.
And then he runs away from home as a teenager. He enrolls himself in military school, and the way that Bob Roberts presents it is, oh, I pulled myself up by my own bootstraps and I got myself into school. And then they cut to his mother saying, well, that's not quite true. He forged my signature on a check.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to Yale, and then he goes to Wall Street, and he becomes this big insider trader.
Right.
And he, you know, so he presents himself as this self-made man. He's not quite that.
Right. He presents himself as like a folksy type of, you know, right-leaning dude, but behind the scenes, he's really just a businessman.
Right, and the movie is presented as a fake documentary, a mockumentary.
Yeah, they even open it with saying that this movie is a documentary by Terry Manchester.
Right, who is this British filmmaker who is following the Roberts campaign around, because he's campaigning for a senatorial seat in Pennsylvania, and the movie takes place in October of 1990, which is the last month before the election.
Right.
In real life, there were no senatorial seats up for election in Pennsylvania.
Oh, no.
So that's a little dramatic license there.
Okay.
And
then they introduce the people who are on his campaign. His his campaign chairman is Lucas Hart III, played by the late great Alan Rickman.
Yes, and he is just so slimy instantly.
Like, immediately.
When you first see him, you have a visceral dislike for this guy. He's just very...
He's doing
that Alan Rickman thing. Yeah.
Very Snape-like.
Yes, he's just this smug, slimy snake. And speaking of smug, slimy snakes,
go on.
We also have Ray Wise,
the great Ray Wise,
who you might know from Twin Peaks,
right.
And he's got a line of credits a mile long, but Twin Peaks is probably what he's best known for. He was Leland Palmer on Twin Peaks, I believe.
I hate to say it, I've never watched Twin Peaks.
I think he was Laura Palmer's father. But he's playing Chet McGregor, who is Bob Roberts' public relations handler.
Yeah.
And he appears throughout the movie. He's got, you know, he's just like smiling and he's playing to the camera. And whenever there's something that going on that he thinks the documentary crew should see, he just comes in. He's like, oh, you don't want to see this. Come on over here.
Yeah. Hey, let's take a picture of these kids. Hey.
And it happens like 3-4 times over the course of the movie. Yeah. And it's kind of hilarious.
That is true. Well, I mean, also in the opening, they show Bob Roberts being interviewed on like a daytime talk show by
Lynn Thigpen.
Lynn Thigpen, yeah, who you might know. She was an actress who passed away, but she was on Lean on Me. But you might know her best as the chief on Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah, she did that for several years. And I mean, she's just one of the all-time great character actresses. I mean, she just... You know, you see her, you just know she's going to be great. She also did a voice on the Justice League show. She played Amanda Waller Justice League show.
Very nice.
Did a great job there.
Yeah. But, I mean, I also liked how Lynn, when she was interviewing Bob, before the cameras came on, she's like, look, I just want to let you know, I'm not on your side. Like, I hate everything you stand for. You're a terrible person.
I wouldn't vote for you if my life depended on it. And we're talking to Bob Roberts. It is that quick. It's rather funny. And
then they get into like a little tiff after the cameras are off. And,
yeah.
Then she kind of talks to Terry Manchester behind the scenes saying, basically wrapping up his whole persona, like how he kind of took the whole like 60s, like how he's trying to like demean all of the good that came out of the 60s.
Uh-huh.
And like how he's kind of took the whole persona of the rebel 60s and flipped it.
Yeah.
Like the rebel.
And he's using folk music, which you typically associate with like protests and 60s and,
right.
You know, peace, love, harmony, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And he's using it to say how the whiny liberals are ruining this country and got to get drugs off the streets. And he's basically like, as she said, the rebel conservative.
Yeah.
Which is pretty, he said that's deviant brilliance.
Yeah. Yeah. And you hear a lot of his songs over the course of the movie. He's, let's see, I mean, gosh, I'm blanking on the names of the songs right now.
Complain and Complain.
Yeah,
Complain and Complain.
And which is basically talking about how, like, some people don't want to, like, you know, go get jobs, and they'll complain, and it's always somebody else's fault. And, you know, a lot of conservative talking points. He has another song called This Land Is Made For Me.
And there's one about prayer in schools, how Jesus says, you know, the people say you can't pray in school.
Right. Yes. And one about drugs, where he says that, you know, I hate drugs, and we should string up all drug dealers and drug users.
God.
Hang them all. Which, yeah, that's kind of a radical take.
Yeah, and, like, this plays really well in Pennsylvania, all of it.
Yeah,
this.
Yeah.
It's, like, kind of scary. Well, not, I mean, there are, as the movie goes on, you see there are people who see through him, and he does have his, you know, detractors and protesters.
Yes. But, I mean, the people who are into him are really into him. And one of the people who is into him is played by a very young actor by the name of Jack Black.
Right. This is Jack Black's first film.
Movie debut.
Yeah.
Jack Black. He's playing a young Republican, very short hair Jack Black.
Yeah.
And he's, I mean, it's a small part, but man, Jack Black just makes the most of it.
He really steals the scenes.
He has this fervor in his eyes, and he looks almost deranged. He is just like, when he is around Bob Roberts, he's just like, Oh my God!
Right.
He's amazing. He's a poet.
It's dreamy.
He's just the best. And this happened because Jack Black was in the Actors Gang, which was an acting group that Tim Robbins co-founded in the Chicago area.
Oh.
So he had, like, some people from the Actors Gang in there, and that was how Jack Black got into this movie.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So
wow.
So that's pretty neat.
That's pretty neat. And also in this movie, there's tons of, like, celebrity cameos, especially celebrities playing news broadcasters throughout the movie. We have James Spader in it for playing newscaster Chuck Marlin.
Yeah.
We got Helen Hunt playing a news reporter, Rose Pondel. We got Peter Gallagher playing Dan Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
Who else did we have?
Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon.
Fred Ward. Fisher Stevens plays a field reporter.
Rock Bork.
What a great name.
Like, my God.
Some of the names in this movie are really, really clever. And apparently all these name actors did the movie for scale, just because they believed in the project and they wanted to help their buddy Tim Robbins out. I have no idea how he got Susan Sarandon. I mean, that's really impressive.
That's a get.
He must have had some sort of in with Susan Sarandon.
Oh, he had an in.
Ding!
Yeah.
Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon, of course, they were together for, God, who knows how long. They met on Bull Durham, I know, and were together for, like, a couple of decades after.
Yeah. Are they not together anymore?
No, they broke up.
Oh.
They broke up. I remember because, like, at the end, do you remember the movie Role Models? With Paul Rudd and Sean William Scott.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah, and at the end, Paul Rudd, he sings a song to his girlfriend, played by Elizabeth Banks, and he's like, hey, we don't have to get married. We could just be together like Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon. And they broke up in real life not too long after.
So you're saying that movie Role Models destroyed.
It jinxed them.
All right, well.
So
hope you're happy, Paul Rudd. That their breakup is on your.
Do not blame this on Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd is a wonderful human being, an adorable person, and
you know,
and I will not have his name besmirched on this podcast.
You know what? I take that. But yeah, he's infallible. The fault lies. Clearly.
If they'd listened to Paul Rudd more, I bet they would still be together.
Yeah, the fault lies clearly with Sean William Scott.
Yes, obviously. Stifler. I mean, he's an agent of chaos.
Yes, of course. Oh God. So I mean, also throughout this movie, we have another celeb who. In his own right, Giancarlo Esposito, who played Bugs Raplin, who you see throughout the movie. He's basically like this guy who's trying to sort of, he's like a journalist, independent journalist who's trying to take down Bob Roberts, and he kind of digs into his past and try to find all these things.
Yeah, he's this crusading reporter. I have the name. He's a reporter for a newspaper called The Troubled Times, which is like this, obviously some sort of small-scale paper, like an alternative paper. And he's, he's not like in a suit and tie like most reporters. He's in this old army jacket, and he's a little unkempt.
He has like a wool hat. He wears the same clothes throughout the entire movie.
Well, he's at least wearing the same jacket throughout the entire movie. He's got the same look. So you can immediately peg him in the crowd.
Yeah, he's like disheveled, unshaven. But he's just trying to get the truth.
And he's very intense. You know, he obviously like deeply believes in this, and he knows that Bob Roberts is up to no good, and he's trying to get the proof on him. And you
see him throughout the movie, like basically anytime. Bob is kind of, you know, he's making a big appearance somewhere. Yeah. He's always right there saying, Mr. Bob, right? And of course, Bob has like security men like trying to push him away. And,
right. Like he can't get any official clearance to do an interview with him. So he's reduced to just, you know, getting him on the run when he's going from his campaign bus into a building. And he's like, Mr. Roberts, like, you know.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. It's pretty interesting, his role. I mean, of course, Giancarlo Esposito from... his big role was Gus Fring from Breaking Bad, and of course he was in...
And currently Better Call Saul, next Sunday.
Woo! I can't wait.
Ooh! Love that show so much.
Oh, I'm all a flutter. And of course he was in Do the Right Thing and many other movies.
Yeah, he was probably best known for Do the Right Thing at this time. Because Do the Right Thing, that came out in, what, 89? Something like that?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, 89, 90, somewhere around there.
Yeah, yeah. So we follow Bob Roberts on his campaign trail, and then we also get to see his opponent.
An incumbent Democratic senator.
Yes,
By the name of Brickley Paste.
Yeah, these names. I don't know where they come.
What a great name that is, Brickley Paste.
Yes, played by Gore Vidal, another great name.
yeah. Gore Vidal, who is like this big name in politics. I guess primarily known as a writer and commentator, big guy in the left.
Yeah, very much so. And we kind of get to know him. He's like the one who's leading in the polls against Bob Roberts, but then he gets caught up in this scandal where there's this teenage girl coming out of his car, and then there was a picture taken, and people saying, "Oh, that has like a teenage mistress, something like that."
Yeah, he had an affair with a teenage campaign worker, and Paste explains, "No, that was like a friend of my granddaughter's. I was giving her a ride home. My granddaughter was cropped out of the picture,
right?
But he never seems to get ahead of the story, or the scandal keeps gaining traction because the Bob Roberts team keeps hammering it away.
Right.
And the media is kind of complicit in this.
Yeah, and it's kind of alluded that like Bob Roberts leaked the picture, or he has some kind of...
Yeah.
Like this is from his party.
Some shady politics going on in the Bob Roberts campaign. You also see him on his campaign bus, Bob Roberts, and they're doing stock trading all day on the campaign bus.
Yeah.
He's got a whole team of people. They've got these big bulky early 90s computers.
Oof, my God.
And then the ticker tape running through on the bus. So it's very high tech for 1992 or 1990 when the movie takes place.
Fancy times. You see Harry Lennox there, one of his men, the great Harry Lennox.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, and Bob Roberts is talking at one point about how he didn't lose money in the stock market crash, which was, I think, 87, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, well, you know, the smart money got out ahead of time. And from his description, you basically figure out the guy's an inside trader, but he's not saying it in so many words.
Yeah, there's a lot of underhanded things happening, especially with Lucas Hart. And like his whole thing about Broken Dove and whatnot.
Yeah, there's an organization called Broken Dove, which is like this anti-drug organization. But Bugs Raplin, he's trying to get the goods on them, and he says that they were mixed up in Iran-Contra, and they were running guns, and they found traces of cocaine on one of the transport planes. Now, I mean, Lucas Hart, you see footage of him testifying on the Iran-Contra before Congress.
There's a lot of that there, too.
And he's testifying before Brickley Paste, the man that Bob Roberts is running against.
Right.
But they never get the goods on him. And
so the whole thing gets dismissed and
swept
under the rug.
Yeah, and we never really find the positive truth about that.
It's very shady. And as the movie goes on, we see that Brickley Paste and Bob Roberts do have like that debate.
Yes.
And I wrote down a couple of lines that I really liked, that Brickley Pace said something about, like, this is what, you know, about what politics really about, it about what you can do in reality. It's not about image.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in here that's...
They cut the debate together, and I watched the movie with the commentary with Tim Robbins, and they said that, like, originally this was just way too talky and slow, so they cut it up. So they're going back and forth, so you see each of their talking points. And you see that Bob Roberts is a much more dynamic kind of personality,
right,
and much more media savvy than Brickley Pace is. Brickley Pace, he's this guy who's been in Congress for 30 years, and he's basically what we see of him. He offers up a lot of platitudes, mm-hmm, and things like, well, let's get the country moving, and let's work on healthcare, let's work on jobs, let's do. But he never really offers any concrete solutions.
Right.
So he's very kind of set in his ways, it seems like.
Right.
And that's the film, I think, implies kind of that's the problem with the Democratic Party.
Yeah. This is a good, real quick, this is a really good, I really enjoy this movie, but like if you watch it now in today's political climate, it's a little depressing because it's like, oh, this is all, like a lot of stuff that happened in this movie, mm-hmm, is happening right now. It is like too close to home. Like,
it's really almost eerie how prescient this movie is in many, many areas.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was one point where they interviewed Brickley Pace, and mm-hmm, they asked him, well, what do you think of Bob Roberts? And he says something like, well, I mean, he's good at pushing buttons. He's good at pushing racist and sexist buttons. But behind that, behind his eyes, I don't see anybody at home. I don't know what he's about.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, like, I detected a slight whiff of sulfur in the air.
That's such a great
line. Yeah. And, like, I heard that line. I was like, oh, I wonder who that could be related to in these days and times.
Yeah, I mean, I understand a lot of the interview segments with the Brickley Pace character. It's really just them interviewing Gore Vidal, and it's Gore Vidal talking about his ideas about politics and the political landscape of the 1990s. And because, like Tim Robbins said in the commentary, he's like, well, we felt it would be a missed opportunity if we didn't sit Gore Vidal down and just talk to him about politics and the political system.
It's Gore Vidal. You gotta talk to him.
Yeah, yeah. And so they just found an office, and they said, hey, can we dress this so it looks like a senator's office? You know, and they put it like a flag, and it's like kind of a tight shot, but yeah, so it's just Gore Vidal talking about politics, and it's fascinating to listen to.
Yeah, can we just chat you up?
But we see Bob Roberts, and he's going from campaign stop to campaign stop. And this is also interspersed with like little bits of his songs, and you see him performing in concert, and you see like a music video. He does a musical video.
Wall Street Rap.
Wall Street Rap, which is a direct parody of a Bob Dylan video.
I think it was
Subterranean Homesick Blues.
Yes.
Yeah. Johnny's in the basement mixing up the medicine.
I'm on the pavement. Think about the government.
Look out, kids. Yeah, it's that famous video where Bob Dylan has the poster board, and he's just flipping the cards all through it.
Right.
And you see Bob Roberts, and he's doing this, and he's you know, talking about just getting rich.
Right.
And he's got like dancers, like 16 female dancers, and
it's choreography. He has fly girls.
It's very sort of Robert Palmer video.
Oh.
You know, them dancing around, these leggy dancers, and then there's like two of his guys with big money bags.
Yeah.
And we also see Bob Roberts. He's at a beauty pageant.
Oh yeah, the beauty pageant,
the Broken Dove beauty pageant. And there's a little tribute to this, a Spinal Tap in there where they get lost and they're on their way to the stage.
Yes,
and they can't find their way to the right room. And for this whole thing, and it's this long tracking shot, but like a 3-4 minute tracking shot,
right.
Where Bugs Raflin is tracking them the whole way and asking them questions about transport planes that. For Broken Dove that were bought with money that was meant for low-income housing.
Right, exactly. But the money went to, like, just buying planes to transfer drugs and whatnot.
And
of course, Bob is being very evasive. And it's like, well, look, I don't talk to liars. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you're a journalist. You're supposed to be impartial. And,
you
know, that's your job. And I don't answer slanted questions like this.
Good day, sir.
And then we see Bob Roberts when they finally get to where they're going. And he thinks the camera's off. And he's like, what is going on? This is a disaster.
Yeah.
There are some moments where you see the mask sort of slip away. And Bob Roberts just has a temper tantrum.
Yeah. You also see that in another point, too. Because, like, throughout the movie, like, a lot on the bus that they're on. They pull over a lot of times because Bob likes to fence.
He's a fencer, yeah. And you see him doing a fencing match with somebody else in his campaign.
So he gets really intense in the fencing. But then there was one point where... He doesn't like to ride in a bus, I guess. He likes to ride on a motorcycle.
In front of the bus, usually.
So after one night of fencing...
Yeah.
And he gets on a motorcycle, but he gets into an accident. He falls over.
Yeah, he falls off his motorcycle.
Yeah.
Because he runs off in a tantrum.
Yeah, and then like everybody runs to him, and then he just like he's just screaming and heart. Yeah, like you see the demon behind the friendly folksy mask.
And it's a very interesting shot too, because they of course they have a stuntman fall off the motorcycle. You're not going to risk your lead actor and director
and writer
and do that. So like he, you know, what happens is Tim Robbins, he steps off screen for a moment, and then and he's in his fencing uniform, and then he has the motorcycle helmet on,
right.
And then you see the stuntman come in, flip over on the motorcycle. The camera, you know, that's a little chaotic because there was an accident.
Right.
And during those few seconds where the Bob Roberts character is off screen, they switch it out so we get Tim Robbins back in there. It's very cleverly done.
The old switcheroo.
Because like you watch it initially, you're convinced that it was Tim Robbins, and then you watch it a little more attentively. You're like, oh, that's how they did it. So that's very neat.
The magic of movie making.
It's really neat. And we see a little bit of the beauty pageant, and one of the satirical touches that I love was it's a Pennsylvania beauty pageant. I guess it's supposed to be for like Miss America or something, but there's another Trump connection, you know, the beauty pageant thing, which is, it's just weird because I think this might have been before Trump even bought the Miss America pageant. I don't remember exactly when that happened, but
yeah, I mean, well, this came out in 92, so yeah, it might've been,
who knows? I don't care enough to look it up, but, But one of the contestants in the beauty pageant is Miss 3 Mile Island.
Yeah, what was that? I didn't get that.
Hilarious. Oh, well, there was a nuclear meltdown at 3 Mile Island.
What?
Yeah, in the early 80s.
I knew that, but I was like, I don't know.
But
it took me for a loop.
I am sure that in real life there has never been a Miss 3 Mile Island, or if there ever was, there isn't one anymore.
Yeah, no.
And we get little hints here and there of like little shady things or going on around the edges. Like the winner of the beauty pageant is an African-American young lady.
Right, yeah.
And we see some of the campaign workers on the bus with a few of the contestants later on hobnobbing with them. And they're, you know, they're taking them onto the bus for nefarious ends. It looks like, and one of them, you know, one of the young blonde lady, she's just like, oh, you know, she told me she's never even had fried chicken.
Yeah, and you see, like, Harry Lennox, who's, like, the only black guy on the bus.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that kind of hurt.
The look on his face where it's just like, ugh. And you see him earlier in the movie, like, Lynn Thigpen kind of dresses him down a bit for being in Bob Roberts' campaign, and he comes back at her. He's like, what, black people can't have more than one opinion?
Yeah, because Lynn's like, hey, come on, brother. What the fuck are you doing here, man?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, just because I'm black, I have to have talk blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Yeah, you know, he's very, very Carlton Banks.
Yeah. but in that moment, you see, like, where they just said this incredibly racist thing in front of him, and you just see that.
That, you know, like, oh, what have I done?
It just gets real for him for a moment.
Do you want to talk about Cutting Edge Live?
Yeah, we should.
Wow,
that
was interesting.
At one point in the movie, Bob Roberts, he comes on to this popular late night talk show or sketch show, called Cutting Edge Live.
I mean, I don't know what they're parodying.
It is very, very much Saturday Night Live.
What?
I mean, it is, and we've got a celebrity host played by John Cusack, who's a buddy of Tim Robbins, going back to Tapeheads.
Oh man, way back.
And
Bob Balaban's in it. He plays like a Lorne Michael type.
Because when you want a guy to play a sleazy or weaselly network television guy, you get Bob Balaban.
Of course.
You remember Bob Balaban. He's been in a ton of the Christopher Guest mockumentary movies.
Right.
But he's also probably best known for his run on Seinfeld playing Dalrymple. Wasn't that his name?
Dalrymple?
The guy from NBC. And he was part of the reason he was cast because he looked a lot like Warren Littlefield, who was running NBC at the time.
Oh, interesting. And
he was the guy who greenlit Jerry Seinfeld's pilot. But he's playing the Lorne Michaels equivalent in this movie. So
it's said that Bob Roberts is going to be on Cutting Edge Live, and a lot of people have problems with it, a lot of producers and the other comedians. Because, like, well, this guy, he has all these... He said all these horrible things, these right-wing things, like, why are we having him on?
And John Cusack is the celebrity host. He's not playing himself, but he's playing, well, he's basically playing John Cusack. But he goes by another name. I don't think they ever give his name. But he feels very blindsided because he was expecting KRS-One to be the musical guest.
Yes.
You see them, like, they're recording the promos, and he's like, hey, I'm on Cutting Edge Live this weekend with Bob Roberts. I thought it was going to be KRS-One, but, you know, and he just so, like, and they, like, Bob Roberts, he can't even stand Bob Roberts sitting standing next to him.
Yeah, like, he's just not having it. Like, with, some might say that might be how some of the cast felt when a certain someone hosted SNL.
And this, again, this is...
It's eerie.
23 years before.
It is so eerie how...
Yeah.
And
they even like...
Oh, yeah, Russell Dalrymple.
Okay. That was the name of his character on Seinfeld.
All right, so yes.
Okay. And they even, like, have... We even see snippets of the sketches on the show, and it's, like, sort of SNL at its worst, you know, and Bob Roberts and his wife are there, like, oh, well, you know, we love the Lobster family, and we see some people in lobster costumes later on.
I mean, there was also one point where John Cusack, I think he was, like, rehearsing lines for a sketch.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, like, how... Like, I forget what he was talking about. Like,
he's talking about how, like... You know, the corporate media controls everything, even like a sketch comedy show like Cutting Edge Live.
I heard he said that. I was like, whoa, that's...
And you know, and because like these networks, they're run by big conglomerates and big business. They usually like things, the status quo. They like things to go.
Yeah, and he was saying like how you never hear about the bad stuff we do, like, you know,
right.
with trading weapons and drugs because, well, we own the news company and we control what you hear.
Right.
We even own a certain Saturday night... comedy show that has a leftist slant.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ.
And it's...
Did this whole thing get started because of a Bob Roberts sketch on Saturday Night?
It's kind of amazing. It's really interesting. Actually, this might be a good place to talk about the SNL connection. Entertainment Weekly had a nice piece in 2017 for the 25th anniversary of the film. And Bob Roberts had started as a short film that aired on SNL back in 1986. And Tim Robinson goes a little into the history. He says, the interviewer asks him, what was the seed that planted Bob Roberts in your head in the first place? And Robin says, the seed was I grew up in Greenwich Village in the 60s and 70s, and I went away to college, UCLA. I guess I left in 1978 and stayed out in Los Angeles until 1985. I was cast in a movie called Five Corners, and I moved back for a couple months. I rented an apartment in Greenwich Village, and I saw what had happened to the neighborhood. It had been gentrified. When there used to be a first or second generation Italian shoemaker or baker, there was now a David's Cookies. Where an old craftsman used to make guitars, another chain had moved in. Seeing my really interesting bohemian neighborhood turned into more of the same, the mollification of America, for me, that was disturbing. Because it wasn't the Greenwich Village that I knew and I had grown up in. So I wrote the short film in response to that. In the first incarnation for the Saturday Night Live short, Bob Roberts was a yuppie businessman, but he wasn't a politician. He was one of these guys that I saw in the neighborhood that had renovated a condo and was calling Greenwich Village his home. So it was a satire on the gentrification of my neighborhood. As time progressed, I started to write the screenplay. Bob's ambition grew. The businessman became a politician. And Tim Robbins, he started writing this in like around 1986 when the Iran-Contra hearings were happening.
Wow.
And the interviewer asks, was there always music? And he says, yes, there was a businessman folk singer. I actually shot one of the scenes at the Village Gate, which was this very famous nightclub, and Art DeLugoff, who ran the place, really dug the idea of it because he was pissed off about the gentrification, too. Hmm. Times Are Changing Back was one of the songs in there. I believe Don't Smoke was one of the songs, and that became Don't Vote. And This Land was made for me in there, too. And unfortunately, this SNL sketch isn't online anywhere. I couldn't find it when I was looking for it. The Entertainment Weekly person couldn't find it.
What are you trying to hide, Lorne?
But doing the short film convinced Tim Robbins that it could work as a feature film, but he had trouble getting financing for it, as many smaller scale filmmakers are able to. And the film was only greenlit after Alan Rickman agreed to be in it. He read the script and liked it, and Alan Rickman was really hot from Die Hard at the time.
Right. Hans Gruber,
and because Alan Rickman signed on, that was how it found financing. They got financing from I think it was Working Class Films, which is a British. A British company that's done a lot of films. I think like Four Weddings and a Funeral was one of theirs.
Pretty fantastic.
And Love Actually.
I didn't realize like it started from gentrification from back in as a native New Yorker myself, I remember the New York from like the 90s and from when I grew up as being like the pure New York, and it's like now it's getting even more and more gentrified and more like a huge mall. But like now it's like, oh, I guess it started even before.
like, even before like the Giuliani age.
Yeah, like,
you know?
Back when I think it was the good old days, like,
right,
gentrification was hitting. Like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah.
I never thought of that.
It's an ongoing process, I'm sure. I mean, and so back to Bob Roberts on this SNL show, the what was it called?
Cutting Edge Live.
Cutting Edge Live.
Yeah, so when Bob Roberts gets on, I think he was supposed to do like one song, but he goes ahead.
He's supposed to do a song, Don't Smoke, but he pulls an Elvis Costello, and he decides to play his song, Retake America, instead,
right,
which was a political song.
Right, and then I think one of the producers gets really upset and like, mm-hmm, furious, like, what the fuck is this? And
yeah,
she screams at Lorne, and Lorne is like, oh, you... Because Lauren says, like, are you...
Well, she doesn't literally scream Lauren, but she screams at her Lauren.
Her Lauren.
Her Bob Balaban.
Yeah, her Bob. Yeah, and of course, you know, that Lauren is very,
yeah,
you know, complicit in all this. It's like, look, he's going to do what he's going to do. And
yeah,
I think he even says, like, are you on your period or something?
Yeah.
Which is like, god damn.
It's, yeah, one of the pieces I found on this was like, oh, that's the only dated part. And they, like, you know, they probably wouldn't say that today. You know, maybe if somebody's a real asshole, they would, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
So this producer, she gets so PO'd, she walks around backstage and she pulls the plug on the feed.
Yeah, she literally pulls the plugs on the feed, the lights, everything. Everything gets shut down.
Yeah.
And of course, the Bob Balaban fires her. She walks out in a huff, and
yeah,
Bob Balaban apologizes to Bob. It's like, I'm so sorry. We'll have you on. You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is like a huge shit show.
And a little interesting bit of trivia about that, they needed a TV studio to shoot that stuff, so they shot it, because the movie was shot in Pennsylvania, they shot it at the studio where Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was recorded.
Oh.
And when you see her wandering around backstage, she passes by the castle in the land
of
make-believe.
See that.
Yeah.
I thought I saw that. I was like, is that what I think it is?
No, it's the Mr. Rogers Castle.
Huh.
From the land of make-believe.
Won't you be my neighbor?
So that's, you know, that's a little neat bit of trivia there.
Yeah, so look at that.
So
then after all this, you know, commotion happens, Bob leaves with his people. There's like a huge crowd of folks waiting, his adoring fans.
Mm-hmm,
of course,
mm-hmm,
as always, Bugs is there.
Right.
When ask him questions about something. And then she also has like one kind of deranged female fan who's like,
yeah,
she like made her way onto the bus at one point.
Right. You see her during one of the concerts. She's got one of Bob's campaign posters and she's cut out a hole in it, so her face is next to Bob's.
Right. Yeah. It's she's like definitely a little.
And you see this from the view of the documentary, and you know she runs up to kiss Bob, and then you hear two shots ring out.
Yes.
And it's almost like the Lee Harvey Oswald assassination,
yeah,
where it's just like something happens, you don't quite know what happens, and
yeah,
then, you know, people are being tackled to the ground. Bob Roberts is down. He's apparently been shot.
Yeah, the security tackles Bugs like almost immediately.
Yeah,
and then they just take Bob out, you know, to a waiting car, and they get him to the hospital. And there's just like chaos and pandemonium everywhere.
Yeah.
Then you know it's found out like Bob's been shot. And there, of course, his adoring fans are waiting outside as a candlelight vigil almost immediately. They're singing his songs, The Times Are Changing Back.
And Bugs Raplin is arrested because he's apparently the perpetrator. there's a hilarious bit where Alan Rickman as Lucas Hart III, he's interviewed outside the hospital, and he's like, you know, oh, this is why we need to be tougher on crime, blah, 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 blah. And then he just says, now if you'll excuse me, I have to go pray. And he says it so solemnly. It is hilarious. It just,
I mean, the way you said it is, have to go pray.
I mean, I can't say enough good things about Alan Rickman in this movie. He is just hilarious.
Hilariously
in the
slimy
little bits he has to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the police say, he's been shot, but he's going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the police, of course, give out the details about who they arrested. Oh, it was they say Bugs.
Yeah,
his full name, it was like John. I forget his middle name, but it was Raplin. But it was
it doesn't matter.
But it was something. His middle name is something very ethnic, I guess I'll say.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and of course the fans hear that. It's like, oh, he's an Arab. I knew it.
Right.
And then, of course, you see this huge angry mob of Bob Roberts fans, like, just taking to the streets of New York, going to the precinct where he was arrested, just angry. At one point, they beat up a random person.
Yeah, on the commentary, Tim Robbins says that it was a Jewish man that they mistook for an Arab, but, you know, in their fervor, they just didn't care.
Yeah.
They just beat him up because he looked different.
Good enough for me.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't look like me. All right.
And while Bob Roberts is recuperating, his new single drops, and it is called I Want to Live. And it's Bob Robertson, this colonial type thing. He had a new album that was dropping on Election Day. And, you know, and it's all about how he wants to live in a country that reflects his values. And
I want to live.
Right. And the you see the video, and there are all these businessmen lying dead in the field, like there's just been a battle, and there are American flags all around. And then there's Bob Roberts in a duel, and he's in full colonial regalia, and he's in a duel with this hippie type, this big ponytail hippie in a tie-dyed t-shirt.
Dirty hippies.
And they turn their backs, and they start marching, and then, you know, and Bob, like, you know, puts his gun up, and then when Bob turns his back, you see the hippie takes out a rocket launcher from behind his back, starts loading up the rocket launcher, and Bob turns around and takes him down in one shot, and then the hippie is dead, and America is no longer threatened. And then you see the businessman come back to life.
America!
Yeah, exactly. And we cut to Jack Black's character, Roger, and he's like, it's almost like he knew what was going to happen to him. It's almost prophetic. And he says the malaprop prophetic. He means prophetic.
But he's
so, I'll just say it, uneducated and ignorant. He doesn't know the word. And Jack Black, also hilarious. And
he steals every scene in this
thing. He really does. So it turns out, because the sympathy vote from the shooting is enough to put Bob Roberts over the top. He'd been running neck and neck with Brickley Pace before this, and Bob wins the election.
Jesus. Yeah.
And
I remember like towards the end, like you see like all of his, he has like all these kind of, all of his fans become like kind of like cult followers almost.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Zealot.
They're getting more and more intense, and the movie gets more and more intense as it goes on. It gets a little more serious. I mean, cause as we get towards the end.
Yeah, it gets more, like you said, more and more intense. Like, I remember watching this movie like a couple, like years ago.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, it'd be like a fun little kooky satire.
And that's how it starts out.
It starts out that way, but then it gets way more intense and way more darker.
Yeah, and like towards the end, I made a note towards the end. I was like, I remember when this movie seemed absurd.
Yeah.
When it seemed removed from reality, and now not so much.
Yeah.
Towards the end. The documentary filmmakers, because the documentary film, it's sequestered as evidence. The cops are looking at it because it's the only footage they have of the shooting, and it's unclear what happened. But ultimately, Bugs Raplin, Giancarlo Esposito's character, is released because it turns out he had palsy in his right hand, and he could not have held the gun, but the fingerprints on the gun were from his right hand. So it's some kind of setup.
Right.
And we have another celebrity in a small part. We have David Strahan.
Oh, right.
Playing Bugs' lawyer. And I really liked him in this small part. Right. And you see, like, he comes out after talking to Bugs out of the police station, and the reporter asking his line of questions is like, well, is it true that he is a member of the ACLU? And he's like, I don't know if he is, and if he is, so what? but Bugs, as I said, he's ultimately released, and
but I mean, he's already like at this point like public enemy number one.
He's been held by the police for like a few days, I believe, and they're like, well, if it was impossible for him to you know, have fired the gun, why was he held by the police for so long? And David Strahan's character is just, you tell me. Your reporters do your job.
I'm doing it right now. I'm asking you. Exactly. Why was he?
And so later, weeks later, after in January, after the election, before Bob takes office, and Bob Roberts, who's in a wheelchair now, he's apparently crippled from the,
looks like a Churchill almost.
Yeah. They call him to Bob's estate so they can watch the footage of the assassination attempt, and we also have Bob Roberts answering get well cards from constituents and stuff. You know, there's one from like a little girl who's like 7. She's like, Bob, I know it's not February yet, but will you be my Valentine? He's like,
Aww.
Oh, that's sweet. Oh, let's send her a note and da da da. Oh, thank you so much for the get well card. It really lifted my spirits. And don't do crack. It's a ghetto drug. And
Jesus,
because you know you can't write to a 7-year-old without putting something racist in there.
It's a ghetto drug.
That is literally what he says.
God bless America.
There's one moment in the scene where they're watching the video of the shooting where my jaw was agape, where one of the characters reading the cards, the well wishes, get well cards, one of them literally says, "Make America great."
Get the fuck out of here.
Literally happens. I am not shitting you. And I was just like, I mean, look at my notes. It literally says, "Make America great."
All caps, yeah.
Yeah.
Look at that.
That blew me away. I could not believe that. I mean, I thought this was on the nose before, but.
We live in satire.
We live in satire. We really do. But also during the scene, one of Bob's campaign workers that we've seen throughout the movie, Dolores, she gets very drunk and she's just kind of bad mouthing and she reads like a harsher note, like, and there's obviously something up with her. She's
right.
Something's not quite right.
On the level.
We learn later that she quits working for Bob Roberts and we see the documentary team. They're trying to corner her in the parking garage and say like, "Well, why did you leave?" And she's like, I can't say. I don't have anything to say. And we're like, something's up.
Yeah.
And it's a little. Probably. It's a little suspicious.
Gotcha.
Yeah. It's you know, something's not quite on the up and up, and there's this closing shot where it's this big dinner. I think it's like supposed to be an inaugural dinner. I don't think they ever actually say it, but it's in this big banquet hall and the camera's tracking through the banquet hall while Bob Roberts he's playing one of his songs. While he's in his wheelchair, he's like right in front of the stage, and the camera just tracks through the crowd and is creeping through as the song is playing, and then finally it's getting very close to the stage and it's almost up on Bob Roberts, and it zooms in on Bob Roberts, and you see him tapping his foot to the song, and he is supposed to be paralyzed from the waist down.
Interesting.
So it's It apparently all was a sham. It was, you know, something that Bob Roberts' team put up to, you know, get him the sympathy vote and put him over the top for the election.
Yeah.
He's faking an
injury.
Yeah. Yeah.
God.
And it's like, oh, my God. And we also see, like, the vigil outside of Bob Roberts' hotel room.
Right.
And the cops are coming.
God. As soon as you said it to the microphone, now the goddamn.
And,
oh, Big Brother.
Yeah. No. And... all of Bob Roberts' fan, you know, Jack Black and the obsessed female fan, they're all there and they're...
Doesn't Jack Black has the words Bob written on his forehead?
He does.
I don't know if that's tattooed.
I think it's just written in marker or something, but it could be tattooed knowing how weird this character
just
is.
Bob written across his forehead.
And he
has this deranged look in his eye like a...
Yeah, and he's talking to the documentary filmmaker and he's like, "So how's the documentary going?" And he's like hardly blinking.
Right.
And Terry Manchester, the British filmmaker, he's like, "Well, I mean, I don't know." And Jack Black is like, "You know, well, you're lucky. He's, you know, you get to follow a great man like Bob Roberts around and get to know him." And he's like, "Well, I don't know if I like Bob Roberts." And it's like, "Why? What's not to like?" And then someone else, one of Jack Black's brothers, runs in and he's like, They got him. And someone has killed Bugs Raplin in retaliation.
Yeah.
For shooting Bob Roberts, which he, again, physically could not have done.
But that... Why are you bringing facts into this thing? He clearly did it. He's brown-skinned and unshaven. What more evidence do you need?
And if he didn't do that, he had to have done something, right?
Right? Something.
Right, let's just... Let's just pretend that's ringing throughout the rest of this podcast.
America.
And we see the crowd immediately erupt into cheers, just praising God that this guy is dead.
Over the death of a man.
Yeah.
God damn it.
And then the camera pans up to Bob Roberts' hotel room, and we see a silhouette walking behind the curtain, upright. And then he turns out the lights. And
I remember that ending the first time I saw the movie years ago, and like I was like, God,
it's intense.
It's very intense. It's very the movie takes like a serious turn like towards the end.
And we see like the last, I think the last or close to the last shot of the movie, we see Terry Manchester, the filmmaker, going to the Jefferson Memorial in Washington D.C. and the camera pans around the words that are inscribed up at the top, and the words, "I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man." And that just, it just leaves you with that. And it's just...
I know, it's chill. I mean, I know, like, when people think about, you know, the political landscape now and where we're in, they go to films like, you know, Idiocracy and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I mean, after watching Bob Roberts, like guys, if you haven't seen this movie, you really need to see it, because, like,
it is worth seeing. It is currently, it's streaming on the Stars.
Yeah.
So if you have Stars, apparently you can stream that there. Yeah, I'm sure you could also probably rent it at your local library.
Yeah, yeah.
Support your local libraries, ladies and gentlemen. Read.
Yeah, read a book, you nerd.
Yeah.
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 I'm sorry, I came in hot with
go,
that.
Go find the Bugs Raplin of our day and, you know, find out all the... Yeah. Shady shit that's going on out
there. Yeah, toss them a buck or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this movie, like, I remember, like I said, watching it years ago, it really left an impression on me, just like about how... Mm-hmm.
It stays with you.
Yeah, like, I kind of saw it as, like, the same way, I guess, I watched The Wire back in the day. Like,
uh-huh.
Because, like, if you watch, like a Law & Order show, like, on, you know, on the network channels, like CBS, NBC, you know, you know, a show like Law & Order SVU or CSI,
mm-hmm.
that you kind of get an idea, or it's more like a... positive look on like how law and, you know, the criminal justice system works. But if you watch The Wire, it's like, no, it's how it really works is probably more like The Wire.
Yeah.
And like after watching Bob Roberts,
all our institutions are fucked up.
Yes.
And here are how and why they're fucked up.
Yes.
And
yes, yes, yes,
yes. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Nope. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Except go vote. Maybe that'll do something.
Yeah.
But yeah, but like, after watching Bob Roberts, I'm like, that's kind of more on the nose about how the political system works. And it's also, I mean, I also liked it because, like, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine about this a while ago about mm-hmm. how, like, it seemed like for, you know, up until 2016, like, I noticed how more and more it was more important to be, like, more of an entertainer than it was, like, a politician.
Yeah.
Like, nowadays, you can't be just, like, a boring, nerdy politician who is...
Like a John Kerry or
something exactly. Like somebody who's undynamic, but they know... the law, and they know how policies get pushed through, and they know mm-hmm. how the government works. You can't you can't just be brainy. You have to like have some razzle dazzle. You got to be like entertainer.
I remember that happening in the 2016 campaign. I remember during the Democratic convention. I remember Hillary at one point during her speech saying like, "I'm not the natural campaigner that my husband Bill is," and she is not as dynamic of a speaker as him. And I think even she would say that.
Yeah,
but I mean, she knows her stuff. She's knowledgeable. She's qualified and all that. But Bill Clinton was like he had the force of personality.
Yeah, he had the swagger and
he's playing the saxophone on the Arsenio Hall show. He looks good on TV. He speaks well and
I don't know if maybe all this was happening like way back from since maybe that John F. Kennedy Nixon debate when they first had televised debates and you see Kennedy looking all young and confident. You see Nixon all. You know, hunched over and sweaty and...
Right, because, I mean, the thing I remember hearing, and maybe this is anecdotal, maybe it's an urban myth, but, like, the people who listened to the debate, the Nixon-Kennedy debate on the radio thought Nixon won.
Right.
But the people who watched it on TV thought that Kennedy won. Because, like, apparently Nixon didn't want to have any makeup on TV, so he looked very bad.
Like, sweaty and, like, worse than usual.
And, yeah, and, you know...
Nixon wasn't a pretty boy. Let's just leave it at
that. And Nixon and, you know, John F. Kennedy, who's one of the most charismatic politicians of all time...
Yeah.
I mean, you still look at footage of Kennedy and you're like, oh, my God, what is happening here?
Oh,
I feel tingly all over.
I'm feeling feelings.
but... And, you know, Nixon needed all the help he could get against that guy.
He needed a lot of work.
but Nixon, I think, was just like, you know, he was probably of the generation, oh, I'm not wearing makeup. I'm not going to play that game. What you see is what you get. I'm genuine.
Yeah. And people didn't want to get that.
No. And, you know, Ronald Reagan, he was a charismatic guy. He was an actor. And, you know, so he had that working for him. And
Yeah. So maybe it's been happening since then where, like, you have to be more of an entertainer than a politician. But, like, it wasn't until... like this last election, 2016, where being an entertainer was even more important than being a politician.
Yeah.
I mean,
we were literally elected a guy from a reality show.
Yeah, a man whose first job in politics is president of the United States. First job in politics.
I know. It's president nuts when you think of it.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, politics, and I may have even said this before on the show, so forgive me if I have, but politics is like the only field, it seems, where... lack of experience is considered some kind of virtue.
Yeah.
Where it's, and I always say, like, if I went on a job interview, if I wanted to be like a heart surgeon and I walked into an operating theater and I was like, hey, don't worry, I've never operated on anybody in my life. Do you think they'd let me operate on that guy?
Here's a scalpel.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Hey, I've never driven a semi-truck. Could I have this job driving a semi? Why, sure. What could go wrong? But somehow in politics where it's like, don't worry, I've never held office. I'm not one of these. I mean, you know, there is something to be said for politicians who are too entrenched or do nothing or whatever. I mean, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think basically what happened basically was like people kind of are at that point where they don't trust like what the stuff they've been fed. You know, like what a politician should be.
Right.
Like, you know, like a man who brought himself up by his bootstraps. I'm a good Christian man, you know.
Right.
Married my childhood sweetheart. Got three wonderful kids.
I mean, that is always what we want to believe. We want to hear that story. We want to, you know, get behind that.
But yeah, I think as the years went on, people have started to realize that's kind of, you know, bullshit. That's why people like our president is in office. That's why even like Obama was in office. And that's why people like Bernie Sanders got a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like people don't want the norm that they have been fed.
That's true. That's true.
That's the same old, same old.
Yeah, that is true. And, I mean, but, you know, the like Brickley Pace says, you know, let's be real.
Yeah.
Every politician is going to disappoint you to some degree. You are never going to be 100% behind any one politician.
That's true.
So you find the person who will disappoint you the least, or you think will disappoint you the least.
Yeah, and somebody who you think will... You want somebody who knows how the system works and how the machine works and will push through stuff that will make your life a little better.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, no one's going to make your life amazing or all the way, but like you want somebody who can realistically make your stuff a little bit better. But I think now people just kind of want to glom towards an image or it's people who think the way they do, even if they think like the horrible thoughts that they think.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Like, you know, like brown people are ruining this country or like...
Right.
Like, oh, yeah, he believes the racist... stuff I believe.
Right.
He's my guy. It's like,
he validates my racist beliefs.
Exactly.
Therefore, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No, you want somebody who's better than you, who's smarter than you.
The president like, is supposed to
idiot.
Be the best of us.
Yeah.
I want the president to be smarter than me. I want the president to be more compassionate than me. I want the president to be shrewder than me. I mean, I want the president to know more about how government works than I do.
Yeah. I'm a dumb. I don't want to be president. I want somebody who knows more than what
I
know.
I want the president to know how to pronounce a wide variety of words.
Yeah, like prophetic.
Yeah.
Did I say it right?
Yes, I believe you did.
Prophetic?
Yes.
Prosthetic?
Yes.
Okay.
You said prosthetic correctly.
Philanthropic?
Yeah.
Prophetic? Okay, now I'm just Bob.
I mean, I want all that good stuff. And
yeah. Like, I don't want an entertainer. I want a boring dude who knows how the system works and can like
I want a policy wonk at this point.
Yeah.
I want somebody who is like, yes, I am ready, I'm prepared, I have studied for this my entire life.
Right.
I am ready. I to quote Elizabeth Warren, I have a plan for that. Practically everything she says, I want a plan for that. I mean and that's, you know, right now at this moment in time, I am supporting Elizabeth Warren. That is my personal opinion.
You. Far out, but yeah, we want people who want plans, not just Twitter followers
and have
great Instagram press.
But you know what? If it's not Elizabeth Warren, I'm still gonna vote for whoever's on that Democratic ticket. Because
hear, hear.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And yeah, we're putting our opinions straight out there.
That's
but,
right.
I mean,
yeah. Sorry, all you Republican whatever have you. Don't be a sensitive snowflake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I try to be the bad guy. It doesn't come out quite.
But,
Yeah, and that's Bob Roberts.
There's also some interesting trivia regarding this movie. Like, as we said, the movie features a lot of the Bob Roberts songs.
Yes.
And but there's never been a soundtrack album issued.
That's weird.
Because Warner Brothers Records was going to release it, but Tim Robbins actually had it written into his contract that they couldn't do a soundtrack album because he never wanted the songs used out of context of the movie.
Oh.
He was like, I never wanted to be driving around and hear it on some right-wing talk radio show, like play it as a sincere thing.
That's actually really smart.
And you know, I used to think, well, that sounds really paranoid, Tim Robbins. I don't think that would actually happen. I mean, now I'm like, no, Tim Robbins was 100% correct.
I could totally see that happening. I mean, he probably got the idea of the way like Reagan used the Born in the USA.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah, the Bruce Springsteen song. Yeah, which,
for, yeah, like if you listen to the words in Born in the USA, it's an anti-war song.
It's about a Vietnam veteran who comes back to the country after fighting for the country, and he has nowhere to go. No place for him.
Yeah, it's actually an interesting song, but like people just hear Bruce repeat Born in the USA, Born in the USA, and
because it sounds like this big triumphant rah-rah America song.
Yeah,
that's how people, and whenever I hear it played like during a fireworks celebration on 4th of July, I'm just like, have you listened to the fucking song?
there's no one listen to words anymore.
It drives me nuts because, I mean, it really shows, like, I mean, you hear that a lot in rock music where it's like, you hear a song that's like super catchy, but you like you read the lyrics or really listen to the lyrics, and they're depressing as hell.
Yeah, very much so. Like, there's that one song I really like by The Jam, "A Town Called Malice," which is about like, you know, growing up poor. There's that one song that came out that was really big a while ago, "Pumped Up Kids."
Oh yeah, that's about a school shooting.
It's about a school shooting.
I know. Yeah,
the pumped up kicks.
And there's a lyric in there like "faster than my bullet."
Like Jesus, like there's so
like,
many.
Like I mean, the police song "Every Breath You Take."
Yeah, I'll be watching. What else could we think of?
You know, like in Sting's mind, he's like, you know, this was all about surveillance and you know who's watching you and in his mind, it's like this super creepy song. But because it was a really catchy tune, people think of it as a super romantic song.
Right.
And I remember seeing like a Sting thing where he's like, whenever people tell me like, oh, we played that song at our wedding, I think this is really sick.
Yeah, like don't do that. Or that song, The Clash, "Train in Vain."
Oh yeah,
which
yeah.
Is about a song about. It sounds like a very upbeat song, but about a guy who got dumped. And it's like his heart's broken. Then I also listened to the words "Just Like Heaven" by The Cure.
Yeah,
like it's a song. It seems like a very lovey, dovey, sweet love song. But then at the end, you hear no. He's a song about a man who's lamenting the love of his life who died.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, wow.
You remember that song, "Semi-Charmed Life"?
Yeah.
It's about heroin addiction.
It's a heroin song. Yeah. And I heard that in like every teen movie in the 90s.
But it's... it sounds like it should be in a like a Fruitopia commercial or something.
Yeah, it's like a commercial for detergent or something. And it's like, it's about a heroin addict.
But it sounds really peppy, so... let's see some other neat trivia about the movie. This movie actually has a cameo from not only Tim Robbins' common law wife Susan Sarandon, but Susan Sarandon's daughter Eva Amore Martina.
She
is one of the kids early on when Bob Roberts is making an appearance at a hospital.
Oh.
She asks, "Hey, can I see your gun?"
Oh, that's her?
That's Eva Amore, who's grown up to be an actress in her own right. She's been in a lot of things.
Far out.
I know she was in Californication. She was in that that movie that Adam Sandler did with...
Abby Doobie?
Yeah, that Adam Sandler did with Sandberg.
That's My Boy?
That's My Boy.
I didn't see that
She was like the teacher that slept with Adam Sandler's character when he was a kid.
Hey, now.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. Oh, boy.
And
oh, yeah, and then Susan Sarandon played the older version of her, right?
Yes, exactly.
That was
exactly.
Interesting.
So she played a young version of her mother. And all the songs in the movie were written by Tim Robbins and his brother David. They co-wrote the songs together. I believe all the music is David Robbins. And they are the sons of folk singer Gil Robbins of the Highwaymen. Tim Robbins has some real folk music cred.
I didn't know that.
So that's really neat.
What? The Highwaymen, that's not familiar. They had like a huge hit or something like that.
I believe they did. I'm not really familiar with their repertoire, but...
Guys, call in.
Yeah.
Let us know.
But...
no one ever calls in.
No. I think it's because we don't have phones.
You know what? You're probably right.
That might have something to do with it. Let's see. Yeah, but Tim Robbins, he shopped the project around for 6 years, and that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So, guys, I mean, I can't recommend this movie enough. Like, it's definitely...
It is worth seeing.
It's worth seeing. I mean, it's crazy how prophetic...
Mm-hmm. Prophestic.
Damn it. Prophestic. Like how this movie, and how relevant it is to what's going on today. It's like...
Yeah.
It's eerie.
Well... I mean,
it's eerie how we almost towards we said the, eerie
that time. And towards. But the moment that really blew me away was like towards the end when I heard "Make America Great Again." Literally those words, or it was "Make America Great." But I was just
that's
I mean, but that is so you know, three out of the four words. That's freaking eerie.
Yeah. Ooh, yoy, yoy.
But so yeah, it's worth seeing.
Yeah. But yeah, check it out. And yeah, that's the movie. And I don't know, I guess that's the podcast for
that's
us.
What we got a little Twitter feedback that Ooh. I think is worth seeing.
Oh yeah, let's talk about some tweets we got.
Last week we read a little feedback from Cinephiliac, who took us to task a little bit because we like the RuPaul show. Well, no, they didn't take us to task on the RuPaul show because they hadn't heard it yet. We were recording the RuPaul show. We didn't like the Robbie.
Robbie?
I'm sorry.
Are you all right?
Robbie was the name of the sketch.
J.J. Watt.
The J.J. Watt.
And Luke somebody.
Yeah, see, the names are so unmemorable. I was blanking on them. Okay.
It's not Luke Null.
So we heard back from Cinephiliac, who says, I just now heard your feedback on my feedback. I definitely don't want you guys to blow smoke up the show's ass every week, as I tried to make clear. I was just puzzled because I have listened to you for many episodes and usually agree with John's takes, including this week, by the way. He means the RuPaul show. In this case, I loved those three sketches. This is talking about the J.J. Watt show.
What?
Admittedly, I was on cannabis edibles, but not for the first time.
Oh,
and your negative take was just so surprising. You're right that a lot of people dislike the episode overall. I just love those three at the beginning. Thanks for the appreciation of my Twitter handle, and I'm excited for Bob Roberts' great movie.
Yay! Well, thanks, man.
So, Cinephilia, yeah, I think you buried the lead a little bit with the cannabis edibles. I think maybe that was the difference.
Might have been.
If you watch that show straight, I don't know if it would work as well for you.
Yeah.
But
watch it straight and sober, and then let us know if it holds up.
Well,
I mean, everything's awesome on edibles.
Yeah, but,
I mean, so I hear.
No judgment. I don't know. I've never watched SNL on cannabis edibles or done anything on cannabis edibles. So,
all right.
but I thought that was very amusing. And we also heard from your sister, yes. Melanie, about she had lots of things to say
yes.
about the RuPaul show.
Number one RuPaul fan.
Yeah, and she gave us lots of information
she came
about
in hot.
That. She did. And she did confirm that one sketch that really confused us was a Designing Women reference, and
right.
she even gave us the clip.
Right, so like if you were a fan of Dixie Carter in that one scene she had in that one episode of Designing Women, that
a show that ended in 1993.
Yes, that sketch was for you.
Yes,
that is such a narrow.
Well, it was like I said, it was like most people won't get it, but the people who got it, they got it.
Yeah,
they got it so hard, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost in awe of it. I was like, I'm not even mad at it.
Yeah, no.
It's like, all right.
No, because I mean, you know, it wasn't particularly for us, but that's okay. There'll be another sketch coming around that is for us,
and that's okay.
That's right. That's right.
But yeah. So, what did my sister have to say? She said like a.
Oh, I don't have it right now. I thought you were going to get it.
Oh,
it's your sister, for God's sake!
Son of a beast. All right, wait, hold on.
Well,
I mean, I know one thing she mentioned. Like, she was wondering when are we going to do Ghostbusters, which we'll talk about that. We could talk about that some other time.
Our plan right now is to do Ghostbusters when the new Ghostbusters movie comes out next summer, because SNL will be off. Our plan is we are going to cover Ghostbusters 1, Ghostbusters 2, the female remake of Ghostbusters, and we're even talking about covering the Ghostbusters video game, which just for shits and
Ooh.
Games. So we are going to have a Ghostbusters month
right. I mean,
on
look,
the SNL Nerds next summer. So don't you worry.
Yes, just hold your horses.
It's coming.
Look, we both love, we're both huge, I think I can say we're both huge fans of the original Ghostbusters.
Absolutely. All-time comedy classic.
Yeah, so we want to do this right. We're not just going to half-ass this and do it Russian.
Mm-hmm.
It deserves a big platform to be presented on.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get some guests as well.
Oh, hot damn.
Oh, I found another couple of tweets while you're still looking for Melanie's tweets.
Here I got it.
Sarah, who's at ConsciousDeer88, when we posted up the RuPaul episode, she replied, "Yay, something to listen to while stuck at work all night." The non-pro account they replied, forced listenership is our number one demographic. And Sarah said, it's definitely willing listening, and it gives me a chance to drown out both my coworkers talking and the sound of loud machinery. So that's nice.
Oh, there you go.
So thank you for that, sir. We're happy to hear that we've made your workday a little bit easier. And I can definitely relate to that. I've listened to a lot of podcasts at day jobs.
That's how I get through the day.
It really does help.
Can't be alone with my thoughts.
Yep.
So my sister tweeted saying, Darren was right on the money with the Designing Women reference. That shit was hilarious. Every gay man and woman that grew up in the 80s knows that scene. Dixie Carter's character was Julia. Dixie Carter's character was Julia, was a meanie, but when she overheard a bitch talking trash about her sister, she went off. The Reed skit was too much. Holy shit, that skit was for me and Queens, not you cis men. That's us.
That's cis, C-I-S, yes, not, C-I-S. Not cis like sissy.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Or sister. Or whatever. Right. That was my sketch of the week. Reading is the same as roasting. Same animal. Here's a clip, and she showed us. She included a clip of Reading. Also, here's me with one of my faves, Alyssa Edwards from last drag con I attended. You're welcome. Yeah, my sister gave us a picture with her with a drag queen.
Okay.
Now I will answer any questions that came up. It probably takes RuPaul up to 3 to 4 hours to get camera ready. He could do a quick drag, but he has a rep to protect. Can't look like trash. So that's why we didn't see RuPaul all. RuPaul'd up.
Right. I mean,
3 to 4 hours.
I think I said the week before, like, if we saw RuPaul in drag, it would be early in the show.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's got to take a while to even get out of all that stuff, especially if, you know, for a show like SNL where you have to, where quick changes is the name of the game.
Yeah. I knew it'd take a long time.
So, yeah, I'm not surprised. I was just goofing when I said it would take 15 minutes. And I hope that was clear. But
you're just joshing?
Yeah.
And of course, one of our big fans, Ruby DeRube, says, along with the cameo in a sketch based entirely around cross-dressing, that episode also had Gap Girls and Coffee Talks.
Oh, this was talking about the Charles Barkley episode.
Oh, right.
Where Nirvana was the musical guest.
Right. So
where if you see pictures of Kurt Cobain with RuPaul, that's where they come from.
Yeah, so RuPaul was on SNL back in 93, and there's even a picture of her holding
Frances Bean.
Frances Bean, yes. Yeah. Good Lord. Kurt Cobain's baby daughter back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's adorable.
Yep.
All right. So, and yeah, that seems like be all we got. I guess that's it.
I think that's it. I think that's all we had to cover. What are we going to do next week? I mean, we got 1 week left in February. SNL is not back. We got to figure out something. Our show needs content.
Okay.
What are we going to do?
All right.
What are we going to do? I turn to you Darren Patterson.
All right. Well, how about this? Because it's February, Black History Month.
I've heard about that.
Let's do a black SNL movie.
Okay.
That's all black and what have you.
All right.
Let's.
Okay.
Oh.
All black and what have you.
Oh, I'm adorable. What's favorite SNL cast member who's a black dude? Chris Rock. How about we do a little something called Top 5?
Yeah,
movie
okay.
That was written and directed and starring Chris Rock.
All right, sounds good. Another auteur movie.
Indeed. And
We got Tim Robbins, we got Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Both writing, directing, and starring.
Yeah, I mean, as far as movies go, Chris Rock, his movie, filmography, it's a little spotty. It's pretty spotty, but I think Top 5 is one of his better movies.
I never seen Top 5, but I'm looking forward to seeing it. I remember the previews looked pretty good. I remember it's Rosario Dawson. She's a reporter who's following him around for the day. He's like a famous comedian in the movie.
Yeah, he's a famous stand-up comedian. He's kind of falling on a hard time, but he's trying to make a comeback. And Rosario is kind of following him around.
And I know Leslie Jones is in it as well.
Yes, there's one scene where Chris Rock goes back to his old neighborhood and he goes to his old stomping grounds.
Uh-huh.
And there's one scene where it's him, Leslie Jones, Jay Farrow, Michael Che, and Tracy Morgan.
Wow.
So
lots of SNL connections there.
Pretty black.
Okay.
So, our next episode, Top 5.
All right. That sounds fun. I'm looking forward to it.
And there's tons of other celebrity cameos, which we'll talk about later.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Let's do it.
All right. So next week, Top 5.
Hot diggity damn.
All right.
Yeah. And if you want to follow me on Twitter and Instagram, you can follow me at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Trumbull Comic, TrumbullComic. comic. And if you want to follow the show, we are at SNL Nerds Show on Twitter.
Right. And please follow us at nonproductive, non-productive.com.
Mm-hmm.
Follow the nonproductive Twitter page at nonpro.
And if you want to contribute money to the show, help us keep the lights on here so we can still like record the show, keep giving you guys all this fun, free content.
Yeah.
You can find our Patreon and contribute there.
Yeah.
Non-productive.com/Patreon. And you can just indicate you're contributing for the SNL Nerds because you love us so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And please, also another great way to support the show, give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. We haven't gotten one in a few weeks, and we would love to read another one. We'll always read that on the air. But yeah, please let us know.
Yeah, what the hey, man? Let's get some reviews up in here.
Okay. So I think that is about it. Do we have anything else we need to say?
That's all I got to say.
Okay. Well, you know, please go out and vote in your primaries. Vote in November. Just vote.
Just
please.
Do something.
Please help us out.
You lazy sack of so-and-so.
If for no other reason than to keep us talking, keep us from talking about this crap every damn week.
Yeah. Yeah. Think about us and what we're going through.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Really, that's what this election is all about, us.
This country is for me.
Yes.
Like Bob Roberts, I tied it all together.
Yeah, we came full circle.
I tied it all together.
But so we'll see you next week with Top 5. But until then,
Nerds out!
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.